This evening I'd like to pick up a talk from a few weeks ago where I spoke on metta meditation. And if I remember correctly, I spoke about how to develop metta meditation up to completing the first stage of developing metta for oneself. And just to briefly recap that process. To start with, in metta meditation, we have to be very clear as to our intention to be ready and eager within our own hearts to abandon all kinds of ill will, enmity, grudge. And to have the very sincere wish to purify our hearts of these kinds of afflictions. So when we first come to sit meditation, first period of time, a few minutes, we just spend watching. That's all, just watching. What's going on? So we do this to give ourselves some kind of perspective, some space in our mind, to make sure that we're going into the metta meditation with the right attitude. And in that space of watching, mindful awareness, our goal is to very simply be aware mindfully with equanimity of whatever's happening. It means not reacting and responding to what's happening, but just being aware of thoughts, emotions, sensations in the body, sounds, and so on. And when we've been doing that for a few minutes, we feel reasonably confident the mind is in space, and we start doing metta meditation. And we begin with very simple words, may I be happy, and repeating those constantly throughout the meditation. So the words we use in meditation are important. It's not so much important what the words are. And this is one of the things that people waste time with, is worrying, oh, I don't like using these words, I'll use other words or something like that. It's not so much important what the words are. What's much more important is what is the attitude of mind that you bring to that recitation. The words themselves, even if they have connotations for you, actually after meditating for some time, those connotations usually become stripped of their meaning. I'm sure you're all familiar with that process whereby words, once you repeat them often enough, become strange and new, as if stripped of all their usual connotations. So don't worry too much about that. The words will develop their own connotations through the practice of meditation itself. What's important is to say the words with evenness, with clarity, with distinctness, and being aware of the meaning of the words. If you can do that, then gradually, by doing so, we are clarifying our intention. That is the intention of non-ill will. Moving the mind in the right direction. And so as long as the mind is genuinely and wholeheartedly saying those words, then it's not possible for unwholesome thoughts to arise. The mind is becoming clear of unwholesome thoughts. And as the mind is clear of unwholesome thoughts and directed to what is wholesome, to what's uplifting, it's natural that this wholesome direction of the mind tends to evoke a positive emotional response, a sense of joy, a sense of rapture, a sense of light that arises in the heart. And this is what we call the feeling of metta. Qualities that we're looking for in that feeling of metta is first of all the quality of happiness. Secondly, gentleness and softness. Thirdly, light. And fourthly, evenness or continuity, not something that flashes in and out, but something which sustains. When a feeling which is like this arises, we just hold it or cup it as if we were holding something very precious in our hand, very delicate. And the Buddha used the simile of holding a quail in one's hand as a simile for meditation. This is a very beautiful illustration of the perfect attitude of mind in meditation. To be able to hold a little baby bird in one's hand so carefully that it wouldn't be able to escape and fly away, but also not so tight that you would crush it or harm it in any way. And that's how we hold our meditation object. If we can hold our meditation object, in this case the feeling of metta, with that level of clarity and care, what we will find is that the feeling of metta itself will start to feed back. It will start to grow because of our attention. And so the process starts to amplify itself. The feeling of metta becomes stronger, more clear, and as it becomes stronger and more clear, it of course wants to attract the mind to pay attention to it even more. And as that process builds up, we gradually move our mind through the different parts of the body, scanning through the different parts. And as we're taking our mind through the different parts of the body, because the feeling of metta actually is a feeling of the mind, that it manifests itself in all the different parts of the body that we take our mind to. So we spread that feeling through our body until the whole body is soaked with loving kindness. As that process reaches completion, we develop an awareness of a full body. So you can see in the mind's eye your own body sitting there in meditation, glowing from within with the feeling of metta. And this is very much like a glass Buddha image which is lit from behind by a candle or something, and you can see the glass just glowing from within. So you can develop the metta to that stage where it feels like the whole body is filled with that metta and is very light and joyous. And if the mind reaches that stage and that lasts for a reasonable period of time, so say 10 to 20 minutes, then this is what we call the completion of the first stage of metta meditation, metta for oneself. And all of this time we've been keeping the words going, may I be happy, which are ticking away in the background. At the beginning of the meditation they're more prominent, they're the basis of the meditation. And as the feeling of metta becomes stronger, remember it's the feeling itself which is actually the object of metta meditation. And the words are directing our mind towards that feeling and containing our mind within that feeling so that the mind doesn't drift off too much. So this is the completion of the first stage of metta, loving kindness for oneself. And anybody who can do this has already done very much. This is not a small thing. In this stage we call the nimitta at this stage, the ugaha nimitta, the preliminary nimitta. And that nimitta means the stability of the feeling of metta, which manifests as a distinct object within our consciousness, as we call the metta nimitta. And the kind of samadhi at this stage we call kamika samadhi, is a temporary concentration. So once we've reached this stage, we're ready to move on to the second stage, metta for a loved person. There's a few crucial bits of information for developing metta successfully for the loved person. Actually, doing metta for the loved person is usually not very difficult, and usually you can do that stage without too much trouble. Of course, there are many people who find it easier to develop metta for a loved one than they do for themselves. If that's the case, then just do the metta for the loved one until you feel that is full and complete, as I've described the metta for oneself already, and then bring the metta back, do it for yourself, and then keep on practicing that until you can feel the metta for the loved one and the metta for oneself to be equal. Now, before doing metta for a loved one, first thing that we need to know is that this is not a process of reaching out from our own body into the body of that other person and taking some metta by some mystical process from us into them so that they feel good. Metta meditation is not a practice. The purpose of metta meditation is not to make other people feel good. The purpose of metta meditation is to develop the mind and overcome the defilements in the heart. Now, of course, it should go without saying that one of the results of that, that will flow on naturally from that, is that one will have more metta in dealing with other people, and that it will tend to make those that you love more happy. But don't confuse the purpose of the meditation, okay? Don't be indulgent in doing the meditation. It's not about increasing your attachment to your family, for example. This is not the purpose of metta meditation. It's about overcoming those defilements in the heart. And as the Buddha said, that use the love of a mother for their child as the paradigm of metta to be developed for all living beings. So this is where the metta meditation is moving. It's moving towards loving kindness for all living beings. So when we practice the metta, on the second stage and all the other subsequent stages, we don't reach our mind out from here and go over there to where that person is and try to give them metta. We keep the mind exactly the same as it is in the first stage of metta, inside the body, inside the body, inside the body, never leaving the body, holding that whole body image in the mind, keeping everything exactly the same, and only changing one thing, which is the words that you use into a sign. Instead of "may I be happy," then you put the name of the loved person into that phrase. "May my loved one be happy. May my loved one be happy." Using whatever their name is. Now just that is enough to evoke. All you're interested here to do is, by mentioning that person's name, is just to evoke the kind of emotional response that that person tends to bring out in you. That's all. If an image of that person appears in your mind, just don't worry about it. It's irrelevant to the meditation. Don't think of it as something important. So this is the first important thing is to just keep the meditation inside the body, keep it grounded, and keep it as simple as possible. The second important point in doing loving kindness for the loved person is to be careful about who you're choosing for that loved person. Now, each of these stages of metta has its own potential problems that can arise. So, and this is what happens when the meditation gets twisted or doesn't work properly. So in developing loving kindness for oneself, then of course the twist of that, the perversion of that meditation, is narcissism. In developing loving kindness for the second stage, the perversion of that is attachment. So when choosing somebody for this second stage, there are certain kinds of people who you want to avoid. And the first kind of person you want to avoid is anybody who you have or could potentially have sexual desire for. And this will immediately corrupt the purity of your intention. It will become a mixed intention. And sexual desire is always associated with a feeling of wanting gratification, wanting to get something. Whereas metta meditation and true metta is always purely associated with wanting to give, wanting to let go. So normally in a sexual relationship with somebody, that these things are mixed up, that there's both of those things there, both a genuine concern and love for the other person, but also a need for that person to gratify your own pleasures. So in doing metta meditation, we want to try to avoid this dichotomy by having the metta purely giving metta, giving loving kindness. So avoid anyone who you might feel sexual desire for, and also avoid somebody who you might have other kinds of wants or needs or something like that that maybe could get in the way of metta meditation. So that might be, for example, somebody who you're wanting a favour out of, somebody who you're wanting to get money or something from, somebody who you want to, you know, get to like you for some reason. Okay, any of these kinds of mixed motives should be avoided. And so just somebody who you have a very simple and uncomplicated love for. Remember that in this stage, it's not the strength of that love which is important. What's important is the simplicity of it. So you might love your mother very dearly, but also have very complicated issues with her. And that would mean that she's not an appropriate person for metta. On the other hand, there might be somebody who is merely someone who you're fond of or who you like, with a simple kind of friendship. And they might be a better person for you to do metta for, even though your feelings for them are not nearly as strong. So remember this, it's not the strength of your love in metta meditation which is important. That strength is what's actually developed through the meditation itself. What's important is the purity of it. And the second kind of person to be avoided in metta meditation is the dead person. And the general reason for that is because metta is a meditation which is associated purely with happiness. It's a very simple meditation. Always remember that metta is the first of the Brahma Viharas. It's the most simple and childlike of these meditations. It's a very playful meditation. It's a kind of meditation which is unsullied by knowledge of the world. It's metta by itself, doesn't encompass the tragedy of the world, the pains of growing up, the pains of separation and divorce, the knowledge of death. These things are not developed in metta meditation. These things are developed in other kinds of meditation. What's developed in metta meditation is very simply and very purely that kind of unconditional love, which is a very simple and childlike happiness. So if we start developing metta for somebody who's passed away, then that complicates things. We have a sense of loss, a sense of grief comes into the meditation. Okay, so this develops a complexity in our emotions, which is not what we want here. We want a simplicity in the emotions. So in developing these, be very conscious. This is why I mentioned at the beginning it's important to know what is your intention when you're actually coming to develop meditation. The development of emotion in meditation like this is a different kind of thing than developing our emotional competence in ordinary kind of consciousness. In ordinary mind, and of course, we need to be able to develop a mind which can encompass and deal with these complexities of different relationships with somebody, of memories of joy, of sadness, of anger, of grief and separation, all encompassed within one person. That's part of what maturity means, is that we can deal with that. So in terms of personal development and character development of our emotions, those things need to be there. And they are all helped in our meditation in different ways. But in that time when we're developing metta meditation, that's not the time for developing that complexity. That's the time for developing a simplicity. So whoever you can develop that very simple, uncomplicated, childlike love for is the person you should be doing that second stage. Now, if we've developed the first stage to completion, developed it properly, then usually the second stage will not be too much of a big deal, not too difficult. If we can go to that second stage, practice it for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that, a reasonable amount of time, but not, don't need to spend it for too long. And we can go up, to, once we feel comfortable with that second stage, we can come back to the developing the first stage of metta, develop that for another 10 minutes or so, see how that feels, and go back to the second stage, develop that for another 10 to 20 minutes or something like that, see how that feels. And by doing this, we learn what is the different emotional tone and colour of these different stages. Now, because the stages are different to some degree, there is a different kind of, very slight different resonance or different tonality to the different stages. There's a slightly different flavour. But the crucial thing is that our metta at these different stages be even, that the strength of the loving kindness, the stability of the mind, should be equal between the first and the second stage, so that you don't find the mind dropping off in energy or in concentration, you don't find the joy drifting off, you don't find the mind losing interest at these different stages, the power of the mind contracting. So we just keep it even for those two stages. Now if we can do that, then this is the completion of the second stage. So then we're ready to move on to the third stage. The third stage is a neutral person. And again, with that neutral person, it doesn't have to be somebody who is completely and totally you don't have any feelings for, just somebody who generally you don't either strongly like or dislike. Just feel kind of neutral about them. Don't have much feelings for them one way or the other. Now the defilement of this stage, just as the defilement of the first stage is narcissism, the defilement of the second stage is attachment, the defilement of the third stage is boredom. People who are neutral to us, we're not interested in them. Normally we don't pay any attention to them. We don't notice them. And so when we try to turn our attention to something which is intrinsically boring to us, then the mind tends to switch off. So this is the kind of problem which we tend to encounter in the third stage. The mind loses interest, drifts away from the meditation, and the feeling of metta dissolves, comes back to... it loses the joy, it loses the zing, the piti, the rapture, falls away from it, it's replaced by equanimity. So at that stage, if that happens to a minor degree, then that might just mean that the meditation will just decrease in its strength or intensity for a while. Okay. Now if that happens, then just come back to the second or first. If it just happens a little bit, then persevere. Maybe it'll recover. If it doesn't recover, come back to the second stage or the first stage, rebuild the metta, make it strong again, and try again. Severe level, what will happen is that the mind can drop into what they call bhavanga. It's a term they use in meditation circles that basically means the mind which drops to a very basal level where there's minimal awareness. The mind's very peaceful and equanimous, but there's no mindfulness, no clarity of mind. It's a little bit like a deep sleep state, but it's something which tends to happen to meditators. Especially when the tranquility is strong and the mindfulness is weak, then the mind tends to drop into its bhavanga state. And that bhavanga state as such is not harmful. The mind's basically just resting in a minimal awareness. It's not doing any harm, but it's just kind of a bit of a waste of time, and it means that you're not developing your meditation while you're doing that. And that bhavanga state is quite seductive. It is very peaceful, and just like sleeping is something which is quite seductive and quite attractive, quite pleasant, so being in that state it's a bit of an escape, and so the mind tends to kind of like it and want to go there. So you have to be careful of this if the mind is tending to go into that kind of state. So usually you won't realise it right at the beginning, but eventually you kind of you'll wake up and realise that something's happened. So whenever you find that the joy, that the pleasure has gone out of that feeling of metta, then you need to get out of that. You need to come back and redevelop that. Metta should always have joy with it. So if one of the ways that you can use to counteract this in the third stage is to make sure you choose an energetic person for your neutral person. If you choose a lazy person for the neutral person, then that, or a person who's very deluded, a stupid person, then this will tend to amplify these things. So you should choose someone who's reasonably bright, reasonably energetic and so on, and not somebody who's too dull of mind. One extra help that you can use at this stage to overcome these problems is to develop the four iddhipadas before starting the meditation. Now the purpose of the four iddhipadas is essentially to rouse up the energy and the strength of mind. And so Ajahn Mahachapchai recommends that if you're developing the third stage, spend a few minutes reflecting on the four iddhipadas before you start your metta meditation. So how you do that, if you want to introduce that practice at the third stage, is you start off your meditation, you do the practice of mindful awareness until you feel reasonably clear, ready to start. Then you go to the four iddhipadas, and so you remember those four iddhipadas. The first one, enthusiasm; second one, energy; the third one, awareness; and the fourth one, inquiry. And then you ask yourself in turn, if each one of these, do I have that present in me? Where is that enthusiasm? How can I rouse up that sense of enthusiasm? And you try to look for it within yourself and try to bring it out, make it conscious, and develop that feeling of enthusiasm until you feel that coming up strongly within you. And then you next ask about energy. And so energy is that sense of resolution, that sense of persistence, that sense of not giving up. Where is that? Where is that sense of heroic effort? And the third one is awareness. And so look for that. Look for the awareness. Where's the mind that knows? Where is the mind that watches? This is the citta, the awareness. And then finally, the inquiring mind. The mind that wants to find out things. The mind that investigates. It's an active quality of mind. So, if you reflect for a few minutes on these four iddhipadas, and then when you feel each one of those has been awakened within you, you make it conscious within you, then just start with the first stage of metta and develop those stages exactly as you would normally and come up to the third stage. Okay, and so that awakening of those iddhipadas will tend to give more power to the mind, more energy to the mind, so that it will be able to do the third stage without any problem. Now, if you're able to complete that stage, finish the end of the third stage, you still feel you're able to do that for 10 to 20 minutes or so, if the mind feels good, the mind is bright, still got energy, and you test it by comparing the metta there with the metta at the first and second stages, and then you're ready to move on to the fourth stage. Of course, the fourth stage, kindness for the disliked person, is the most difficult of all the stages. And this is where the chooks come home to roost. This is where you really begin to see how successful you've been at being able to overcome anger, or how much that the mind is still dominated by these things. And you'll find that time and time again, when you think that you've overcome your anger or ill will for somebody, that it just comes back. This is the nature of the mind. We've been thinking these thoughts and doing these things and trying to get our vengeance and all these things for countless lifetimes. It's not going to go away in a hurry. So don't have too much expectations. But what we can do in the metta meditation is to develop a space within which we find freedom from these things. And that freedom, ultimately, is where the joy of metta meditation comes from. The joy of metta meditation is nothing more than the happiness of the mind when it realizes that it's free of all this crap, and that in itself makes it happy. And so the happiness that we can get from accomplishing this fourth stage of metta will be even stronger, even more powerful. So as usual, we start just as we did for all the other stages of metta, keeping the mind in the body, focused on the whole body image, the whole awareness of the whole body, and the feeling of metta through the whole body. We choose somebody for our disliked person. It doesn't have to be a blood enemy, some of you have sworn vengeance upon. You can do that if you like. Buddhism's got plenty of stories of people who have these vendettas going down through lifetime after lifetime. And so this is one of the classic stories in mythology and so on. It's this kind of pursuit of hatred to people. And one of my favourite tellings of this is in the Greek mythic cycle, the story of the house of the Atreides. And it started with Tantalus and his great crimes, and went down through generation after generation after generation, and each generation more atrocities were committed, more people were killed, vengeance was extracted, and then the cycle continued and perpetuated through the years and through the generations, and the family ended up killing each other and being destroyed every year, every generation. Until finally, Orestes sought for and found forgiveness. And so there was this act of forgiveness. And at that moment, it's told quite beautifully that he had been pursued by these gods called the Furies, who were these hideous, stinking, vile creatures who pursued him all wherever he'd gone. Because of the deeds that he'd done, he'd murdered his mother in vengeance because the mother had murdered the father. The mother murdered the father because the father had murdered the daughter, and so on and so on. So finally he asked for forgiveness, and when he did that, the Furies were changed to become the Eumenides, the beneficent ones, the kindly ones. So this is a very extremely powerful story, and extremely psychologically acute. And so that those Furies will pursue us until we can find that moment of forgiveness. So that is what we're seeking when we come to do this fourth stage of metta meditation. We're seeking for that redemption from anger, from ill will, from this quite insane wish to actually harm another sentient being. And so this is the thing which the great sages and the teachers, spiritual teachers, tell us that we should be looking for, and yet it seems so hard to find. It's very easy to say, love your enemy, but not at all easy to actually do it. And as hard as it may be in a conventional sense to give forgiveness and to be able to get along with your enemies, but it's far, far, far more difficult in meditation, where that thought of that disliked person is completely central to your consciousness. Your mind is so bright and clear and focused and directed entirely on that task of overcoming ill will for that disliked person. And so even the slightest remnant of annoyance and aversion and so on will become amplified, will become clear so quickly, so forcefully. And so this staging of meditation, you need to be incredibly mindful, otherwise that the nimitta, the beautiful feeling of metta which you've been developing all this time, will be just ripped away from you. And the mind can tear itself from beautiful, soft loving kindness to raging fury and vengeance in just a matter of seconds. So that's why this stage of meditation, to really accomplish it, needs very careful preparation. So this is why we have all these different stages of the practice, and this is why we take our time with this. We don't try to rush it, and we don't think of it as something that's small or easy to do. Not just a matter of sitting there and thinking nice thoughts about someone you don't like and thinking, oh, this is, that's it, I've done the metta for the fourth person. That's not it at all. And when you bring that disliked person into your mind, then saying their name again, the basic method of meditation continues exactly the same as all the previous stages. So you're still reciting the words, you're putting the name of that loved one in those words, may that loved one be happy, and keeping the mind focused inside the body. So again, you want this to be even. If you find that that feeling of loving kindness drops off when you do the fourth stage, then you need to go back. But actually, typically what happens is not so much that the energy falls away in the fourth stage as it did in the third stage. In the fourth stage, actually the mind tends to be very energetic, and losing energy is not such a problem until, of course, the mind just becomes weary of the meditation. But generally speaking, low energy isn't a problem here. The mind actually becomes very energetic, very eager, very awake, and it leaps towards its meditation object. And the mind leaps towards its nimitta, and it's clearly focused on what it knows to be the task at hand. So this is, in a sense, the last job that we have to do to overcome the hindrances. And the mind knows this. It's covered all its bases, and it knows there's just this one thing that needs to be done. And so the mind goes inwards and inwards and inwards into this meditation. And so at this point in the meditation, we start finding that the one-pointedness of mind begins to increase quite dramatically. So whereas previously we were very conscious of having that feeling of metta being embodied, and feeling the full body awareness, and now that feeling of the body is starting to drop away. Again, it's not starting to drop away as something which is separate from the feeling of metta, but it's simply that you're going inside into the feeling of metta so deeply. And this is a similar process to the one that I described when I was talking about breath meditation a couple of weeks ago, where you go, like the feeling, the mental feeling of the nimitta is actually experienced. It's not something that's separate from the breath, but it's almost like the essence or the heart of the breath itself. It's revealing its true nature, spiritual nature. And the same thing with this metta meditation is that you're not developing something that's separate from the body, but which has gone inside the body, so you're seeing from inside into this nimitta. So the mind tends to be very bright, the mind's very eager and focused, mindfulness becomes very sharp, incredibly sharp, and you're aware of even the slightest twist or slip from the meditation. And of course, if the mindfulness drops back even just a little bit, then the mind will start going off into thoughts of ill will. And it's extremely important not to allow the mind to think anything about that person. Just keep going with the words, may they be happy. Do not think anything at all about them. And if you catch yourself starting to think about them, bring it back to the meditation very, very quickly. Because those thoughts, as innocent and as nice as they may be, are just the tendrils of Mara sneaking into your meditation, and before too long they will become twisted and they will be full of venom and hatred if you allow them to continue. So do not allow yourself to think about that person at all. And we just go further and further into that feeling of loving kindness. So that feeling of loving kindness, the stability and the concreteness of it at this stage, as I mentioned before, is what we call the ugaha nimitta. And the kind of samadhi at this stage is what we call kanika samadhi. Okay, so kanika samadhi, they sometimes describe in modern times as being momentary concentration, and you're aware of this, and then you're aware of that, and then you're aware of the other, and that's momentary concentration. No, that's not momentary concentration. That's not concentration. Okay, that's being aware of lots of different things, which is exactly what concentration is not. So real kanika samadhi, the word kanika is not in the sense meaning here of momentary, but it is meaning of temporary or short term, is one of the basic meanings of kanika. Okay, so it's used in the sense of if you have a one-night stand, for example, it's called a kanika relationship. Okay, it doesn't mean it's momentary, it means it just lasts for a short period of time. So this is what kanika samadhi means, certainly how it's used in the forest tradition in Thailand. So this kanika samadhi has a quality of being, when you first start to meditate, that the mind is like mostly drifting and subject to different thoughts and emotions and so on, and only a bit is with the meditation. And so most of it is distraction and only a bit of it is actual meditation. That's how it often feels at the beginning. The kanika samadhi in the sense is what happens when the mind actually sort of goes the other way around, so that you're mostly with the meditation, mostly focused on it, but still the distractions and so on are happening from time to time. So that's kind of what kanika samadhi is. And so that the feeling of metta has a certain solidity and a certain consistency, and it remains there even if the mind becomes distracted for a period of time. So if you go off and think for a period of time and then you come back, the feeling of metta will still be there. So it's still got that sustaining power. And it will go up and down and so on, but gradually during this whole period the power of that samadhi will gradually be increasing, and particularly you'll start to notice that in the fourth stage. The power of samadhi will increase dramatically, and one really feels for the first time that one's starting to go inside the mind, and for the first time you'll start to notice that the external senses are really dropping away. A feeling of awareness of the body is disappearing. There are very few wandering thoughts. There's a great deal of eagerness to be with the meditation itself. And as you continue going like this, what tends to happen is that the mind will drop down to a slightly deeper level of concentration as the tranquility builds up. And that manifests in the mind by a strengthening of the nimitta. So the nimitta doesn't strengthen evenly. It strengthens in stages. It tends to go along like on a plateau and then drop down to a little bit further and then keep on going on another plateau and then drop down a little bit further. So at each stage, there's a twofold process where the mind on the one hand wants to be exactly where it is and to stabilize that nimitta, but on the other hand, it gets a bit excited by the fact that it's getting more concentrated. And by the fact that it's getting excited, of course, means that it tends to disturb the concentration. So this twofold process is constantly going on. The mind gradually coming to a oneness, unifying, coalescing, and then getting a bit either excited or a bit scared or something, and then jolting back a little bit, stabilizing again, and then sinking down again. And so that nimitta comes up stronger and stronger each time. At a certain point in this process, what arises is what we call the patibhaga nimitta, the counterpart sign, and that counterpart sign signals the onset of what we call upachara samadhi, is the threshold concentration. Now the patibhaga nimitta will be dramatically and powerfully different from what you've experienced before, and it will come into the mind with a tremendous strength, a tremendous sense of light, tremendous solidity, and a tremendous continuity. It will be very stable and still. It's possible to mistake this, so it's possible to get an nimitta which is not actually the patibhaga nimitta, but which you think it is. Okay, and so you think, oh wow, this is the real kind of thing, and that's of course quite normal. That's just the power of delusion. And what tends to happen then is if you think you've got it and you haven't really, then the mind will be very bright and clear for a few minutes, but gradually that will disappear, wants to be stable. But when the real thing comes up, then you know, blimey, that's the real thing. And you can't mistake that. So you can think that the not real nimitta is the real one, but you can't do the reverse. You can't think that the real nimitta is not the real nimitta. Once it comes into the mind, it's so powerful that it's completely unmistakable. So that strength of mind, that power, at that stage of meditation, the Patibhaga nimitta, will push out and suppress all of the defilements and all of the negative forces of the mind. And at that stage, particularly in metta meditation, we call this sima sambheda. The technical term is the breaking down of the barriers. Now, the idea of sima sambheda is that the metta that one has for the four persons, oneself, the loved one, the neutral one, and the disliked one, becomes completely even so that one cannot distinguish between those four persons. But it's important to notice the sense in which that happens. This is not the case that sima sambheda merely means that one doesn't feel anger towards any of those four people, or doesn't merely mean that you feel equanimous in considering those four people. What it means is that the possibility for distinguishing and discriminating between those people simply doesn't exist anymore. Okay, so can you see that distinction? It's not saying I could discriminate against them, but I choose not to because I'm such a good person, and I choose not to favour one or the other. Okay, that's how we tend to operate. For example, if you're being, say, a judge in a court case or something like that, you might think, well, I like this one and I don't like that one, but I'm not going to let that influence me. Okay, that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is simply the fact that one is completely unable to make any kind of discrimination at all. The capacity to do that has been removed from the mind. So at this stage we're starting to realise that strength of what the Buddha talked about and the power of that mind which has become transformed through the power of meditation. Now, at this point, what we do in metta meditation differs a little bit from what we do in breath meditation. In breath meditation, when the Patibhaga nimitta arises, we simply watch it. We just stay there and don't do anything. Okay? There's nothing more to be done. In metta meditation, there's still a little bit that needs to be done. So what we do there is once that's arisen, and we're confident that the Patibhaga nimitta has arisen, then we shift our object of meditation from the disliked person to all beings, or all people in this world, where Adinayacacha teaches it is all people in the world. You still are directing the mind very, very, there's a very tenuous remnant of directing the mind. At this point in Anapana, you've completely stopped trying to direct the mind at all in any way. In metta, there's still a little remnant of pointing the mind in a certain direction. And so what one wants to do here is to expand awareness outside of the body. So we have these ideas that's talked about in the metta teachings, in the suttas, of the mind which is apamana, is immeasurable, the mind which is limitless, vipula. And so now we're about to experience what that actually means. So we talk about, for example, the idea of an expansion of consciousness. It's a metaphor. But here we actually experience what happens when the consciousness expands. And so the way to do this is simply to spread, allow the mind to radiate out of the body. Now what you're not doing here, again, is going to individual persons and wishing them to be happy. Okay, that's bringing that discrimination back in. But what one's doing is allowing the field of metta to expand. And that field of metta, just like a rays of light from a candle or from the sun, wouldn't discriminate. The rays of light from the sun don't seek out a particular person so they can illuminate them. They just illuminate the whole world. So this is how that goes in metta. So you just allow the mind to relax those boundaries, of course the boundaries which you didn't even know existed, and allow the mind to move out from the body, and just do that gradually in stages. To may all people in this room be happy, and then when that feels stable, just a short time, it doesn't need to be a long time, just a short time and stable, and then may all people in the monastery be happy, and may all people in the village be happy, and may all people in the district be happy, may all people in the state be happy, may all people in the country be happy, may all people in the world be happy. And so you just gradually let that spread out across the whole world. And then when the mind feels stable with that, with may all people in the world be happy, then just you can just, that's the time to let go of the words of metta completely, and to let go of everything. So that process doesn't need to take a long time, it's just a couple of minutes, just enough to gradually, you don't want to wrench the mind out of the body, but to gradually let the mind expand stage by stage, let it be very natural, it'll just move out and encompass the whole world. If the nimitta, the Patibhaga nimitta, is the real McCoy, then it will do that without any problems. If you find that when you're expanding the mind like that, that somehow it doesn't go, that the metta doesn't reach, or that it falls back, or that you don't know it, then that just means that it's not really the Patibhaga nimitta yet. So it should be very clear, very definite in your mind, that you can feel the sphere of consciousness expanding to cover that whole area. And there, just let go. And the mind has gone to the stage of what we call apamana, and will enter jhana according to its own causes and conditions. So from this stage there's nothing that you can do. No, you've already completed what the meditation method is there to do. And the mind will become peaceful when the conditions are right and when the mind wants to. It will let go of those last vestiges of attachment to the sense-sphere realm and enter what they call the rupa world, well, the world of the rupa jhanas. Each stage of this meditation is a stage of letting go. We're letting go of those things which are coarser, which are more harmful, more damaging, and gradually developing those things which are higher. And then when those things which are higher are developed, then we gradually let go of them as well. Little bit by little bit by little bit, letting go, letting go, letting go, until we're able to let go of everything. Just go into that purity of the mind. So this is my little talk for you this evening on metta meditation and how to develop the stages of metta meditation leading to jhana. I offer this for your reflection and consideration, and I'd like to invite if there's any comments or questions.